made two trips to California, and the number one spot for me, it was the Redwoods. So it caught my attention that you were bringing this film, but I had no idea about the controversy. I guess I'm a little bit surprised. I thought we were way past redwood cutting many years ago.
Well, you know, coming from New York City originally, I too was shocked that it was legal to cut down 2,000-year-old redwood trees. They belong to the ages. They've been here since the dinosaurs. You know, I'm an Earth Firster. Earth Firsters believe that everything on planet Earth has a right to be here for its own sake. We don't need to justify the existence of a redwood tree to allow it to stand. The redwoods do, of course, provide incredible shade. They modify global warming like all trees and forests do. They provide habitat for fish, for incredible volumes of birds and animals. But they are also incredible beings in their own right.
Tell me a little bit about yourselves, how you got together in this passion of yours.
When I moved back in 1985, at the age of 30, I found out immediately that these giant trees were being clear cut. In fact, there was a corporate takeover of one of the oldest redwood companies, and they had doubled and later tripled the logging. I met Judy Barry at the Mendocino Environmental Center, where I immediately fell in love with her. I was running for Congress. She was a graphic artist as well as a grassroots organizer, and she designed my brochure for me. And we immediately started working together. Judy, in addition to being an incredible orator and writer, is also a fiddler, a mother of two, and was a carpenter. And she was a labor union organizer on the East Coast. So she brought with her a sense of what working people want and need in life, especially when it came to the loggers and mill workers. And so where there used to be a hostility between environmentalists and loggers, and, you know, that actually did continue, Judy sought to build bridges coming from that labor union background. And so we worked together both on labor organizing and also in saving redwoods.
What were the tactics that you tried?
Well, I think the marvelous thing about the campaign to save Headwaters Forest, which was what we called the large grove that we did wind up saving both through the federal and state systems, is that it embraced all of the tactics. We did labor organizing inside the sawmills and with the loggers. We did lawsuits against the company. We did tree sits and bulldozer blockades. We also worked to help the workers because their pension fund had been looted. So we had a pension fund lawsuit. We had shareholder lawsuits. We actually bought stocks and attended shareholder meetings in Houston, Texas. I went down many times to Houston to attend shareholder meetings. Of course, we sang and showed slideshows and did concerts and letter writing. Oh, and the same company, Maxam, that took over the Redwoods, had a failed savings and loan, cost the taxpayers $1.6 billion. We had protests and letter writing to the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation to go after that company. When the steelworkers at Kaiser Aluminum went on strike against Maxam, who had taken them over as well as Pacific Lumber, we allied with the United Steelworkers of America. We walked their picket lines and they walked ours. We were busy little bees.
And the time frame again for that?
It was 1985 until 1999. Now, of course, in the middle of all that, Judy Barry and I decided to call something called Redwood Summer. And Redwood Summer was based on Freedom Summer in Mississippi, where they saw in the Deep South that in order to stop Jim Crow racism and in order to help African-American people get their true right to vote, they brought outsiders in from the North to shine the media spotlight on what was happening. In the Redwoods, we felt the same thing, that people didn't know what was happening. People like yourself didn't realize. And so we wanted to shine the media spotlight by bringing all kinds of people in. Well, when we started doing that in 1990, we started to get a lot of death threats. And then on May 24th of 1990, Judy Barry and I were touring colleges on our way to UC Santa Cruz, and a bomb went off under her driver's seat, almost killing her and slightly injuring myself. She had a fractured pelvis, a partially paralyzed right leg, pulverized vertebrae, impaled on a car seat spring. I was slightly injured, you know, by some miracle. But then the FBI and Oakland police showed up and arrested us instantly for being terrorists whose bomb had gone off accidentally. It was a false arrest, and Judy was lying in the hospital injured, under arrest, handcuffed to her bed. They never charged us. They just arrested us. They smeared our names through the papers. We wound up suing them in federal court for violations of civil rights, First Amendment, freedom of speech, that they lied about us to silence us, and Fourth Amendment, illegal search and seizure and false arrest. And we won $4.4 million in federal court 12 years later in 2002. And to that end, I produced a movie about it. That is playing this Tuesday, the 13th, at the Hippodrome at 7 o'clock.
What kind of footage do you have from the past? Or I mean, how do you capture what happened so long ago?
Well, we led such colorful demonstrations and lives that we pretty much had our own eco-paparazzi following us around constantly, and I knew who all the videographers were. So we had about 700 hours of archival footage. So our movie is based on Judy Barry's deposition. Judy Barry lived through the bombing but died 7 years later of cancer, never to see the trial come to victory. As she lay dying, she gave her deathbed testimony on camera. We used Judy Barry's testimony to narrate her own movie from her deathbed. And as she tells her stories, we take from those 700 hours of archival footage, tree sits, bulldozer blockades, Judy's incredible speeches. She was like our Martin Luther King of the Redwoods. We have lots of documents, of course, but mostly footage, old newscasts as well. And as Judy speaks, we flash back and forth to all of that footage. It's a very colorful, action-packed movie.
It must have been emotional for you to wade through all of that, having lived through it. And you were injured too, right?
Yes, I had two busted eardrums and a scratched cornea and some burns. But no, I walked out of that car in one piece. It really was a miracle that I did. It was a miracle that Judy Barry lived, considering her injuries. The windows were blown out. There was a 3-foot by 2-foot hole in the bottom of the car, that right underneath her seat.
Are you just so relieved that you've had success, or do you carry around anger over the fact that you still don't know? I mean, you seem like a pretty happy-go-lucky guy.
Well, I'm a creative person. We were bombed on our way to a concert. I write and sing songs. I even do a little stand-up every now and then. So yes, I am essentially a happy person. But I channel my anger. Yes, I am angry. I am enraged. I am furious. And I am out to get the person who bombed us. But the way we do that is through our own private investigation. We've tested about 20 pieces of DNA. We are now, today, and I'm telling you, so Florida will know for the first time, offering a $50,000 reward for information leading to the arrest, conviction, and incarceration of who bombed Judy Barry. We also have outstanding court action against the FBI to turn over the remaining evidence to us so we can test it for fingerprints and for DNA.
Do you look over your shoulder anymore?
I think the bomber who bombed us needs to look over his shoulder because we're after that person. Yes, I do take precautions, but you know, when I grew up in New York City, I looked over my shoulder in the 1970s. So it's good to have survival skills, but honestly, we are the hunter. And we want to find out who bombed Judy Barry.
It sounds so much like the Karen Silkwood case.
Yes, but the difference of our case, as opposed to so many other tragic cases, is that we won. We saved Headwaters Forest. We beat the FBI on civil rights violations in the court. And we provide, I think, an inspiration. Rather than leaving this movie saying, oh, those poor people, look what happened, they're going to say, wow, look what those people did. I can do this too.
What do you most want people to be thinking about after they watch this film?
We want this movie to educate and inspire people to action, because Judy Barry was bombed because she was so inspirational, because she brought thousands of people to come and defend the Redwoods through her oratory and her organizing skills. Though that oratory and those skills live through this movie and through all the videotape we have of her. So she is just as inspirational now, I believe, as she was back then. And so we want people to be inspired to act, not for the Redwoods necessarily, but for their promised land, wherever they live. And Florida is no stranger to environmental calamity. So people can watch this movie and say, if Judy Barry could do that after being car bombed, if she could sue the FBI, if she could continue to save the Redwoods, then maybe I can do something too.